Hey everybody, Sean Papian here with a special announcement. We are having the first meetup of Independent Labor Club Philadelphia chapter on Saturday, February 21st from 7 to 8:30 p.m. If you're interested in this event, you can drop an email to ilcofphilly@gmail.com. But there's no need to RSVP. It's going to be once more Saturday, February 21st at 7 p.m. at the Wissahickon Brewery Company on American Street in Philadelphia. Apparently there's two locations of the Wissahickon Brewing Company. This is the one specifically on American Street. So our Philly people would love to see you there. We're super excited about a Philly chapter getting off the ground. If you're interested, go check out the meetup. Email ilcofphilly@gmail.com. Get involved. Of course, as always, you can go to ilclabor.com and sign up and get more info there. Thank you, everybody. So long.
Hi, welcome to Diving Into the Wreckage, where the dam breaks in February of 2026. And which dam? I don't know. In the last 6 weeks, we are in the end of the first week of February. So between the week before, we had this Christmas lull.
Yes.
Just to remind people, because the bombastic attack of memory really does make some things that I used to be skeptical of Guy Debord about seem more correct. So we've had, you know, the ultimate flood the zone in that we had a threat of world war over Greenland that just went away from pressure put on Trump about bonds, and also some unnamed forces within the government, which we have no idea about. We have had ice expansion, but the successful use of Bovino and maybe Christy Nome ultimately as sacrifice plays, a seeming die down of the rhetoric and expansion from the White House, while also not changing that much what's going on the ground. I mean, it's hard to say. I get mixed reports out of Minnesota. But definitely both the media coverage and the local government has been more cooperative. Mm-hmm. You've had strategic drawbacks after Trump got caught saying that he wants to federalize elections, and then Bannon saying the quiet part out loud that every liberal and even some left-wing speculators were saying that he wants to use ICE to do voter intimidation. Mm-hmm. You have like 60% of his court battles going south and increasing even with the Supreme Court. But then you have the Epstein files. Now what's funny before, about all this
before you end your delineation of this cavalcade of events, let's not forget that up until recently, maybe even up until this point here in February, war against Iran seem to be in the offing, or at least some sort of kinetic action on the part of the United States and or Israel. That too has subsided, right?
Maybe, although it's very clear that Netanyahu is arriving in Washington to try to build it back up very soon. You've also had, you had the revision of all the end of the 2025's jobs reports downward. You've had Bitcoin almost collapse overnight. Oh, you've had the largest loss of value in gold and silver that we've seen in human history. We have evidence that we're beginning to see commercial defaults in the commercial real estate industry, something you and I have been predicting would happen for almost 4 years finally beginning to show up.
Mm-hmm.
You've had the realization that one of the reasons why the AI has not had the same problems as, say, the 2007 housing crisis is, even though a lot of this debt is questionable, it comes from real money that was brought onshore in 2019 from Panama and the Cayman Islands and stuff like that. And that one time, you know, repatriation thing that Trump did and the first Trump administration. You've had then, I mean, like the amount of shit that has happened and gone away, and that's not mentioning, you know, me being wrong about Venezuela, but then the Venezuelan government not subsuming to chaos, not even really changing hands, despite all the Trump, you know, agitprop on True Social about it. There's been indications that, that, you know, all the momentum gained from that, which did shut the MAGA critics of MAGA up for about 3 weeks, has also gone away. Mm-hmm. Everyone's obsessed with the Epstein files now. It's become very clear that, you know, even the anti-Semitism of Nick Fuentes has its limits, which is apparently critiquing Jeffrey Epstein. So for all his opposition to Trump and Trump conservatisms, it seems to melt away very quickly the more he gets integrated into streamer world.
And this burgeoning like counter right wing, which I think maybe surrounds Tucker Carlson, this kind of influencer media that's rising up and against conservative ink, as they call it. Fuentes, of course, over the last 6 months has been interviewed by Tucker and others and been integrated into that. So I agree. This is like a I don't know. He represents something, and his refusal, I think, to toe the MAGA line, the general MAGA line on Epstein is very interesting. One thing that we see here, and it's fascinating, you're pointing to, I think, a loss of short to medium term memory on the part of, let's say, the media or the zeitgeist or I guess the voter base, you know, of the United States. But this Epstein thing has legs, very interestingly. We've seen it now for years now, this scandal growing, and it appears as though the interest in this scandal is popular. It's a popular interest. And while we haven't yet seen political effects, broad political effects in the United States, it appears that the reveal of these files, which was only, God, what, like 10 days ago? Might take down, probably will take down, the Prime Minister Keir Starmer of the Labour Party in Britain, due to his relationship with Peter Mandelson, who's a sort of Svengali figure over there, somebody who was a known compatriot of Epstein's. And I say that not just a confidant of his and a friend of his, but also rolling in these same circles. It's the revelation that Keir Starmer hired Mandelson as the ambassador to the United States last year that threatens to bring down his government. So I'd like to point out that while I think you're right to point to like this kind of rolling cavalcade of news events that don't seem to be processed and often don't seem to be remembered, maybe we can talk about why that is. I have some theories on it. There is something that sticks, despite the fact that its coverage in the mainstream media has been up and down, which is this Epstein scandal, which seems to have a popular base, not just among MAGA voters, but also among progressives on the left, and broadly, I guess, what we call independents or normies, it seems like, too, are also interested in this scandal. So that means something, right? And I think that it means that we need to do justice to the issue, to the topic. It would be very de rigueur to say to the victims, right? Because everyone's always talking about the victims, do justice for the victims. And there were many of these, right? We're not in a position to find justice, you and I. We're not in a position to stand by victims. We're not in the position to indict anybody. We're not even really in a position to know anything that I think the average person can just find out by looking at those 3 million files or looking at Jeremy Scahill or other people who have examined these documents. But I think that what we want to put a marker down on is a way to understand the Epstein scandal that's connected to all these different events that you mentioned, but also is not hysteric, is based on an understanding of this scandal as a kind of peek under the curtain, behind the curtain, let's say, of one faction of the ruling class, and maybe look at the way that power operates. I think that there are revelations within this that you and I find very interesting and very compelling and very telling about the state of the capitalist class and the bourgeoisie and its entire political and economic system right now. That has to be separated, I think, from something that you and I are fundamentally have been fundamental critics of for years now, privately and publicly, which of course is this conception of like an all-encompassing Jewish conspiracy or Israeli Mossad conspiracy, whereby these larger, broader political and economic dynamics get subsumed and vulgarized into a sort of like a left anti-Semitism, let's call it.
Well, I mean, I'm concerned about general anti-Semitism, but I think also we've been desperately hurt by people like the I'm trying not to be insulting here, the figures at Sublation Media who've said that talking about Epstein is an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory in itself. Let's be quite frank. The Epstein files are replete with Jewish supremacist claims that non-Jews don't often know how to parse. I'll give you an example of that. In the conversation about getting good converts in Ehud Barak and Epstein, people think this is just a right-wing Zionist ploy, but it's actually not.
Give us the context of it. What did Barak say to Epstein and vice versa?
That they were going to increase conversion to Judaism so that they'd have better quality people to break the hold of the Orthodox forbiddenate, and have better subjects, which is actually for people who don't understand Israeli politics, a centrist conception that is tied to the Ashkenazi, to actually break the hold of people like Netanyahu and Likud, who are more reliant on the Mizrahi vote. Now, it's ultimately proof of liberal Ashkenazi racism, and it is a Jewish supremacist claim, but what people don't miss is it's a battle against, our people miss entirely, is that the battle against other Jewish supremacists
who have specifically, and
the Shahs and people who believe that Goyim have debased souls based off of the Tanya, which is a non-canonical but serious Jewish text of the Hasidim. Also, minority views in the Talmud, which really do exist about the debates around Jewish souls. I want to be clear, though, the consensus position of even the Talmud and of most Talmud scholars is that souls are equal. But it is a minority position in Jewish history. And ironically, the Ehud Barak actually cuts in the other direction. But when you even see leftists, I've seen leftists approach this, you know, mostly from the Marxist-Leninist background, who sound like people that I used to encounter in like anti-Semitic explicit like third wave groups, David Duke types and radical traditionalists, the people who scared me out of the right in like 2004. Is that they will take these statements and make it seem like it is the only position in Judaism. Now, I'm not saying that leftists are doing that, but they seem to like not know how to parse it. The thing is, if you've read like, Israel Shenack or Shlomo Sands, this should not really surprise you. And that there are two different types of Jewish supremacy, one which is based on spiritual supremacy and one which is based on
eugenics, essentially,
which is actually more liberal, mirrors exactly European racism at the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century. The fact that this still exists is shocking, but, and I'm not making excuses for it, because it does play absolutely in to what Epstein was doing. Epstein was a Jewish supremacist and a chauvinist, so much so that it, and a eugenicist, so much so that he was clearly, as a Zionist, willing to work with Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, straight up. That, you know, conspiracy theory about the Zionists tied to anti-Semitic people has now been confirmed. You know, as long as you're not an anti-Semitic Arab, because, you know, you're the enemy here.
Yeah.
Or any Arab at all. But other kinds of, like, white anti-Semites, totally okay. And it's clear in the weirdness and debates around the Trump coalition. You brought up Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is, Tucker Carlson keeps getting implicated in, you know, showing up at the Venezuela oil event, you know, this, like, at the same time he's supposedly critiquing it, and he just says he was just there. You know, like, Carlson's clearly a controlled opposition figure. Mm-hmm. This is organic. I'm not saying he doesn't believe what he says he believes. There's consistency in Carlson after his abandonment of the neoconservative positions around Bush all the way back to around 2004, 2005, that you can find a train of consistent thought here. But he's not kicked out of the House. The call is coming from inside the House, not just in, like, oh, these poor, you know, anti-Trump MAGA. These people were the MAGA people.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a policy debate about how integrated they should be into Israeli politics, because it's a liability. Now, you know, this has also led to all kinds of weird speculation. I saw it even shared incorrectly this week, a thing saying that China banned investment into
Israel. I remember that popping up. That was not untrue?
It's untrue.
Untrue. Okay.
It was based off of a February document that came out of disclosure because someone was suing China for saying that they banned investment into Israel. But there's been no official Chinese statement supporting that at all.
Come there's to no diving into the wreckage ban. For all your China fact checking, for all your Israel fact checking. We're here to check the facts, folks. So that was untrue, but people wanted to believe it, right? I wanted to believe it.
I said, yeah, it's sure. About my response. It's about goddamn time. And it'll shut the Dungus apologists up, who said that if China stopped investing in Israel, that, you know, it would cause China to collapse or some bullshit, because okay. I've been trying to figure out why they hadn't. Now, the thing is that the phrasing should have told us something by itself. Investing into Israel. Is that a block of investment into Israeli companies? Is that a block into investment into Israeli states? Is that a block into investment into things tied into the Israeli?
And who is apparatus? Investing? Is it Chinese state owned enterprises? Is it private Chinese capital? Right. Is it Chinese banks? Is it Chinese arms manufacturers?
Who as much is as I wanted to believe it, I couldn't find any evidence other than this lawsuit that it even happened. I wanted to believe it because I'm a general trying to defend this in some small ways. And I'm like, okay, finally, someone's doing something. Well, it does seem like there has been limits put on formal Chinese investment into Israeli companies, but they're still a major trade partner. I think China is Israel's second largest trade partner still. That has not changed. All right. So what we have here is the erosion of things very quickly. But the problem that you also have is that you keep the crack down on this and cracking down on fake news or whatever is obviously an attempt to censor things and limit the discussion.
Censor and also to spin things, right? Because if people remember, memory is tough these days, especially in Britain, but also in the United States, there was a push to try to convince, I guess, the average person that Epstein was a Russian agent, you know, that this was Russiagate 2.0, that in fact, all of his connections to Israel, all of his connections to the United States and Great Britain, disregard those. It was a Russian honeypot, right? So we're not doing that. You and I wouldn't do that. But there is a way in which this is attempted to be spun right now by a lot of different people, including the left. This arises at a time when obviously we had 2.5 years of genocide in Gaza. Of course, that this adds to the fervor around very important questions, which is what is the relationship between Israel and the United States, more broadly, Zionism, Christian and Jewish Zionism, and U.S. policy, U.S. politicians. What is the connection between, let's say, Israeli capital and American capital? What is the relationship between land purchases in synagogues in Brooklyn and the ongoing kind of settler displacement that we're seeing in the West Bank? These are obviously very important questions, and these bear upon, I think, things that we would all be remiss if we didn't talk about, right? To what extent is the dog being wagged, and to what extent does the wagging? Anyway, you know what I mean. So, right. My take on this. Okay, now I've never been to Israel. Have you been to Israel, Varn?
Officially, no.
Okay.
Unofficially. Maybe
we could cut that out. We don't even have to include
I'll tell you I have been to Israel to go to see to go to see Gaza when I lived in Egypt, but I could not, because I lived in the Middle East at the time. Have that stamp in my passport.
Fair enough. So good faith, you can't say that you have not been to
I've not been to Israel, because I have, because I've been to Gaza, which means I had to go through Israel to get there. I could not cross over from the Sinai, or you know, near St. Catharines. That's not possible, and it's also super dangerous.
So you went through the Rafah crossing?
No, I flew in.
Oh, you flew in?
Yeah, I flew in. And then went to the UAE, and I damn well didn't want that stamp in my passport.
I can't claim that I've been there. I can't claim that I have any special knowledge about Israel, except what I read, and except having experienced, let's say, the Israelis that I've encountered here in New York City.
Yeah, I mean, in that way, you have more attachment to Israel than I do. Although I would say, I knew someone who died on the Israeli side on October 7th here in Salt Lake. Like, it's not...
I remember you saying that.
Like, it's not... I'm not unsensitive to it. And I maybe somewhat cowardly kept my positions other than, you know, generally supporting Palestinian liberation close to the vest for a month. Not because I supported the state of Israel, but because I was in a deep state of... shock and mourning about being basically supportive of something that I knew cost someone's life that I knew.
Sure.
And that was very hard for me. I know that I have also made statements that made people very angry, such as when I said that, like, pretending that there was no sexual assault on October 7th is absurd. It would be the most peaceful wartime attack in history to claim that, although I think that most of the claims made by the IDF intelligence on that topic should not be trusted. And you know,
and the issue was spun, of course, too, very dramatically spun by the mainstream media,
right, which is why I didn't want to talk about it. But like, just pretending that it never happens, or that it was like this was the one time in human history where an insurgency didn't involve sexual assault, was absurd to me. And well, I got called a Zionist for that too.
It has been a good guys and bad guys situation. And I think that we all, at least I know who I consider the good guys, and it's not Hamas. It's not the people who quote unquote like broke out of the concentration camp on October 7th. What was it, 2022 or 23. Of course, the good guys for me are the working class, like the people of Palestine. You know, if I had to pick
if I had to be honest with you, Sean, I've always thought that was a cop out. There aren't that much working class people in Palestine.
Oh, sure. No. I said the people.
Okay.
And I said the people of Palestine.
At the Angry Workers Collective about this, because I'm like, they're not allowed to fucking work in Gaza. Like, yeah,
if you've followed, you're not under no obligation to. Maybe the people who have listened to this, to our show, have followed this, but me and Andy's position, which is a very considered position, because like you, I kind of know too much, have known too much. have maybe more of a grip on the reality of this, especially for like Jewish New Yorkers that I know and love, Jewish either spiritually or culturally or whatever, to make sweeping generalizations about like the Jews or the Israelis. But I would also not make sweeping generalizations about the Palestinians
or even Hamas, to be quite frank.
Like, or Hamas, yeah. Hamas or in the same way that I wouldn't say like the Hungarians believe.
Or the Poles all believe. Right. Yeah, I mean, like
You could point to like various different like political tendencies within Slovaks, you know, but you couldn't say like it's a Slovak belief. In the same way,
I do think we have to deal with a couple of agents in the room about like why it's so hard to get through in the Israeli situation. That does tie to Epstein. One, both liberals and conservative factions in Israeli societies are opposing each other, but they have, at this point, they have different versions of Jewish supremacy as their primary obsession. They have justified this in the history of the Shoah, as Noam Finkelstein and others have very clearly articulated. Most liberal Zionists who were concessionary towards the Palestinians have literally left the country, either coming back to the United States or Europe, particularly Germany, ironically.
Mm-hmm.
France and England are actually considered pretty unsafe places for Jews. Germany is not. But the German state suppression of the Palestine issue has been so severe that, you know, I mean, I look at it, and even I, who know a lot, who can basically figure out Hebrew, have some knowledge of Arabic, can read in multiple languages, and even I go, man, if I was not very well in tuned, I would also believe in a Zog-like conspiracy.
I live in not in, but on the border of the Satmar community, let's call it, here in Brooklyn, in South Brooklyn, in Borough Park. In fact, I've got a Satmar synagogue on one side of my apartment building, and I've got a Satmar children's school on the other side. So, like, to say the Jews, you know, being from New York, it's very difficult, right? Of course, people say the Jews, but who they usually mean is like Woody Allen types. Like,
they mean liberal Jews, or they mean Hasidim like Chabad,
mean like the landlords and the developers, you know, many of them aren't even Jewish, but it's the Jews, right? There's all sorts of petty prejudices that pop around, just like there's petty prejudices towards Black people, Italian people, Irish people, or whatever, right? And this is just sort of the pattern of life when Jews make up one third of the white people in your city. And so I'm not saying
they're 5% in the rest of the country. Right. There's like no Jews here, but like me and like 100 other people. But
yeah. And I'm not saying that like that makes people here immune from anti-Semitism, but it certainly makes people, I think, immune from like a certain, not immune, but makes it difficult for a certain conception of the Jews to really take root within like the progressive and left spaces here in New York City, because so many of the people who I know who have been most affected by the genocide in Gaza. And yes, you know, I'm the type of person where I need to see stuff and I need to think about it. I need evidence and I need time. And it took a year for me to say genocide, but like, it's clear that that's what it is now. And that's what I will call it. That's what we call it. Some of the greatest effects of this genocide that I've seen on individuals who are far from the conflict has been progressive, like Jewish current type people that I know and I'm friends with and I love and I sit down and I break bread with, and sometimes even like go to synagogue with. These people, you know, are not Epstein types. They're not Dershowitz types. They're certainly not like Likudniks or Kahanists, right? They represent, in my mind, you know, what is greatest about what's left of, let's say, the Bundist like socialist tradition within Judaism, which we've seen in our lifetimes, like the extirpation of. And now we have these, as you said, competing supremacies, which I think is very, very important for us to understand that Ghislaine Maxwell and
Ghislaine Maxwell is the daughter of Robert Maxwell. Robert Maxwell is an information broker and also an MI6 agent who was a Nazi killer during the war, but then was a double agent. And we don't even know what side of the ultimate double he was on between the Americans, MI6, and the KGB. And if there was going to be anybody who was going to be crucial to someone being a data broker and maybe getting someone like Epstein, the kind of influence that he had, it would be someone like Maxwell. What we've learned about Maxwell, though, is Maxwell probably got killed by Mossad. And this has been speculated on for years, but there's now evidence. It's not definitive evidence. None of these files are definitive evidence, except for where you see definitive evidence.
Let's not turn affiliation with Mossad or the CIA or MI6 into something more rarefied than it actually is for people within this particular milieu. Somebody doesn't have to be a sworn agent of the Mossad or a sworn agent of the CIA in order to be implicated in these intelligence networks, which, you know, I have some points here about what might be the fallout from this revelation. But we saw from the Church Committee and from the Pike Committee coming out of Watergate in the 1970s that very quickly, and this is actually where Epstein comes from, very quickly after a spotlight is shined upon the workings of, let's say, parapower within the state, parapower within society, very quickly these networks that exist within the state can go underground. Like, what was Iran-Contra but like the subterranean, like, networks that were created during the Cold War, during the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, privatizing themselves, turning themselves into a sort of diffuse network of billionaires and arms dealers and powerful people who existed kind of outside the state, but kind of inside it. What they were doing was illegal, but like they were doing it like as semi-private citizens. This is where Epstein makes his fucking bones, man. If you want to point to where it is that Epstein starts to enter the world of intelligence, maybe it's when he gets the private teaching job at the Dalton School, but maybe not. Maybe when he gets in with Bear Stearns, but certainly his connection with arms dealers during Iran-Contra, which is, like, itself, you see what I'm saying here, a consequence of the fact that so much of what the CIA aspect of the state had been doing in the 60s and 70s gets revealed in the Church Committee, and they can't do it anymore under the official auspices of intelligence. So things are very, very mixed up and very, very confused here. Let's not get ourselves confused about it, and let's not expect that we're ever going to see an email that comes from Mossad that says, "Great work, Jeffrey Epstein, your next task, if you choose to accept it, is such and such." Honestly, because I'm just not sure that that's how things work.
As an asset than an agent. One, he had access to almost every fucking intelligence organization. We know from these files that there's all kinds of Saudi and other Gulf state people all up in this. So much so that some third world friends of mine were surprised. And they also don't trust these people. But like... two, there are Russian connections. It's so minor as to be laughable if you're trying to claim that he was some kind of a KGB hack. Also, why are we referring to the FSB as the KGB? They're not even continuous with each other.
We're fucking stupid, and whole elements of our media don't believe that the Cold War actually ended. They think that there's like it's not just because they're stupid. They think there's like a broad continuity. There's something about Russianness that makes the KGB and FSB and Stalin and Putin the same, which is completely.
They don't do it with like the Cheka and the NKVD though, because that's not the same. Whatever, dumb fucks.
Yeah, they're dumb.
I mean, look, I know people would listen to your hemming hard about the Jewishness. One thing I will say is I've already seen Rothschild conspiracies come up. The number of satanic like stuff come up as people think this is proof of a satanic cabal. There's been evidence that this is proof of Wayfair Gate, which there is some, but it's not confirmed. That they've seen evidence that this is proof of Keech the Gate. I've seen proof that claimed that this was that QAnon was actually a counter spin by people through William Maxwell to lead people off the track. I actually don't think that's that far-fetched. That's one of the ones that I cannot prove from what we have here that I would say I'm not totally unconvinced that that was not.
People like, claim that Epstein was formed 4chan's politics board in order to like bring about I don't know what, like to confuse and disarm
right. Like populist forces. Well, you do have Ghislaine Maxwell moving with this. So what you are learning is you have a bunch of very online elites in a very small circle. One of the things that you are learning is how small these circles really fucking are, that there's basically like three elite circles, and this is a major one, most of which were tied into Israeli developments, the current tech overlords, although weirdly Zuckerberg hasn't come up a whole lot, if at all. But Thiel and Elon Musk have, Elon Musk for being too cringe to be let on the island, apparently. James Carville is actually implicated in a war room with Palantir, which means he's indirectly tied to the files. Epstein was a facilitator and a fixed man. Some people tried to say it was like, oh, it's a blot to make it seem like, but we've always had fixed people. This is how these societies work. And that ties him to the Clinton Foundation, the Gates Foundation, the Trump Foundation, various government agencies.
There's no conspiracy there. Like it, like you, like hemming and hawing. Like all I'm trying to say is that there's nothing particularly like Jewish about this, except to the extent that like a lot of the actors are Jewish. I reject like a Zog conspiracy of the entire thing, but I don't reject the idea that like these are powerful people that conspire with one another. Like I'm willing to concede that any fucking day of the week. And I'm happy to admit, as you say, that there is a Jewish supremacist element to it, but I don't think it's satanic, and I don't even think that in the Epstein case, as you pointed out, it's particularly spiritual. It's atheistic. It's secular, if anything else.
It's eugenic, and actually, there's a couple of things this proves that I don't think people. I think Scahill has been pretty good on this, although I do want to say that even he's been mostly, you know, not looking at some of the weirder implications of all this. The idea that there's a big distinction between public and private morality and people willing to do sex crimes and torture people, particularly, you know, on the younger end of children, you know, teenage boys and girls and between the ages of like 11 and 15. I don't see it's that inconsistent from people who will totally like burn a fucking village down for one intelligence asset, or do what Clinton did in Sudan, which is claim a medicine factory was really making munitions when his on his way out and bomb the shit out of it in 1999, or you know, like that's not actually inconsistent to me.
Or rip the guts out of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, you know, steel plant closes. You know, these are the people that are making all the decisions that you're pointing out, right? Instrumentalizing people, instrumentalizing, using capital, using power, using personal and public power in order to like have their way with all sorts of actors broadly across society. It's not shocking to me that these same people would be engaging in such barbarism, instrumentalizing young and vulnerable people,
particularly from the developing world where they can get them for cheap,
right? And Ukraine, places like this.
What happened to post-Soviet? Like, there's a story about post-Soviet women, in these files that is something that we've all kind of known. Like the word for white sex worker in a lot of Asian countries is just Russian. It's definitely true in Korea. Like, but like the amount of young Ukrainian, Russian, let's not just pick one ethnicity here, Belarusian, even early on Czech, you know, close to the West, women who were like mail order brides. If you got the mail order brides, what the other things you think were fucking happening?
Of course.
What I find shocking about people's like shock at some of this is like it's been right in front of your fucking face.
Did we want to believe that this wasn't systemic, that this wasn't structural, that, like, I don't know what we wanted to believe. I think
people want to believe that it's not systemic, that this is just about a cabal of evil people. Like,
that's a real problem. That's a real problem, because ultimately it absolves the broader ruling class.
Right, exactly. Because you'd be like, okay, who's not in the files? Okay, so there's one mention of George Herbert Walker Bush maybe raping a kid, except the timeline doesn't make any sense in that one interview. That, guys, I've been having nightmares about what I've been reading in the Epstein file, because I've read so much of it recently. There are more serious accusations of the president overseeing post-birth abortions that he was so obsessed about that maybe he oversaw one himself. There's one under threat of perjury that he made a threat of killing a 12-year-old girl's family. That's the president. And that was done under oath. Now, how seriously do we take these? Part of what I think we have to deal with is that these are released because they thought that they're not credible. The credible shit is mostly still about, now this current administration is utterly incompetent and tried to do LLM based securing of all this.
They also took the redacted documents they released, where if you just highlighted and copied them and then paste them into a separate document, you could get at the.
When they didn't do that, it was done with an LLM in a way that looked for coherent words of code, words. You could actually count the words and figure out what it was, because it was the only thing that would fit. I mean, I agree with the people who would say that we are learning that our ruling class is more brutal, particularly people like Bill Gates, who had the facade of like not being eugenicist and not trying to wipe out the poor, which they're just openly speaking about. I mean, you know, everyone, you know, in some ways, the intention behind the Alex Jones worldview has been somewhat justified, except that what you're learning is the people who told you this were also complicit in it the entire fucking time.
Yes, yes, very much so. And it's also become clear, maybe people don't want to confront this too, but Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein, to the extent that they had politics, they were like centrists. They were like centrist liberals. They were like Democratic
Party people. They're Clintonites.
They were Clintonites
willing to work with Trump, because they were Clintonites willing to work with Trump, which tells you a lot about the pseudo debate. And even the kind of idea that Trump represented an insurgency against the Uniparty or whatever, that's bullshit too. He's more implicated than say, I don't know.
Barack Obama, right? Because he's not really in this.
He's so not really in there. No. Biden's not really in there. Schumer is in there, but very briefly for a meeting. But the Clintonites are there. The Clintonites are there so much. And it was funny that the right tried to run with this, because I think it says something completely different about what was going on with Zohran Mamdani. But Mamdani's mother is in there. And there's a picture of Mamdani as a kid around Clinton and Epstein that's legitimate. People take this as like some implication that Mamdani is some untoward satanic and maybe Zionist circles, and that this is also true about his support of Tish, who he actually demoted, but that Tish's father is implicated in all this. But what I actually took away from that was more interesting to me, because there's no implications in the current files, and who knows what'll come out eventually, but that Mamdani's mother did anything on tour. She just knew these people because she was moving in elite Democratic circles,
right?
In the 90s. But it also indicates that Zohran Mamdani as the, you know, the completely organic cadre who comes from, you know, is also from elite Democratic circles, just like Max Blumenthal. A lot of your counter, the anti-elite people are the construction of these elite apparatuses, and they are trying to hide it from you.
And it doesn't mean, I'm going to jump in here, and maybe I assume
you agree. Zohran's even bad. I'm just saying, like,
it doesn't mean that Max Blumenthal is like a cutout, that he's like a CIA agent, or that Zoran is controlled by Mossad or whatever. We don't have to go down these routes. You know, I don't think that, that's what
elite circles think. Are very small.
This elite is what, circles are very small. Like, are we scandalized that there's a ruling class on the left? I mean, and that's kind of been the implicit argument from the very fucking beginning, that there is like a ruling class that's separate from all of us. And like this, Zoran and say Max Blumenthal specifically, right? You have to understand that these people have the ability to enter elite circles because in a way that they've been trained to do that. You know, they've risen up in a milieu. Epstein didn't, you know, he's a working class boy from Coney Island, done good. But these people were raised in a milieu where like leadership, I mean, also, media leadership and politics was considered their birthright. And they were taught.
I'm going to tell you the other dirty thing that people don't want to look at the Epstein files for. It's the same thing you see with J.D. Vance. Striving working class politicians, because they are striving to get away from the working class, are often the biggest fixers and scumbags you will ever meet in your goddamn life.
That's it.
And so getting pure working class candidates, are pure working class, you know, things. Those people are bought off easily. It's just fucking true. Yep. I can tell you this because I've been offered access and money at times as a non-Ivy League, like non-elite person. My stepfather has some minor governmental ties three generations back, but he was a mechanic. My mom comes from dirt farmers. We do have, because a lot of people are more related than they realize, some distant cousins that have some connections. But like, I grew up blue collar working class, right? People have tried to buy me off, like, and not with a lot of money. Like, and in fact, it was often it wasn't money. It was access and the potentiality for money.
Access.
And I hate to tell you this, but a lot of the blue collar politicians that you see are where they are because they are willing to take those bets and other people aren't.
Absolutely.
And so even that check, that superficial, like, oh, we come from the working class. We all know that's like, it makes sense. It's like, if you think about it for 30 fucking seconds, you would think, oh yeah, this person who comes up like this, they seem like they have a lot of influence. I don't know how. I mean, somebody will argue with me that like J.D. Vance was working class. They'll argue with you that Epstein was working class. Yeah. An origins. Like, they obviously weren't in there growing up. And they'll point out, oh, well, you know, Vance's granddad owned stock. And I'm like, you could be a worker and own stock in 1950s. It was actually part of the Fordist program to get people invested more in the corporation, that they would be able to own stock and become low level management. They were not capital owners beyond that point, and they literally were uneducated blue collar people. That has not been possible since the 70s for the most part. I think it was completely dead by the early 90s. But people today are so removed from that world that they can't even tell who the fuck was blue collar in the past and what it meant. So, you know,
and so much. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
No. I mean, but this is like a problem that we have when we talk about the Epstein files. You have a guy who comes up with a fixture out of nowhere, who has ties to the daughter of one of the most infamous MI6/KGB/Mossad agents that ever existed.
And media baron, let's not forget. Right.
Yeah, and media baron who actually got bought out by Thomson Reuters at one point is the reason why, he's the reason why, guys, scholarship is not publicly available. That is Robert Maxwell. He was, you know, so we really do have to think about this in some key terms that are horrifying to, I think, a lot of people. But what I find fascinating and weird is the horror of what we're actually discovering.
Yeah.
That there is not that much difference between public and private morality. That the globalized elites are basically barbarians who even will sometimes offhand talk about having to a way to get rid of all a way to get rid of not poverty but the poors. That eugenics is commonly believed even before neo-reaction and all that became a dominant talking point. That is why someone like Curtis Jarvin could have had any influence in these circles, is it's basically just a pompous and pretentious, almost dumb person's version of an evil genius view sold to elites themselves, because it flatters them and weighs other things out of the far right, including white nationalism, really didn't. It also proves that both centrist and the right, and to some degree, even liberals, are tolerant of this. Chomsky is the biggest fucking failure. Of this, there's no defenses of him.
No,
we don't have yet proof that he went on the island, but he seemed to be willing to try to defend
and give it PR advice to Epstein after his conviction, after his known conviction.
And the fact that this is something we already knew before these files came out, but the fact that Chomsky was all up in Steve Bannon shit, it also proves that these elite circles, despite what you see, are relatively few small groupings of which the ideological differences are treated as kind of a game.
Right.
But we should know that. It's a game that kills people. But it's still a game to a lot of these people. Like Bill Gates versus Peter Thiel is almost just like the public face of this. I do think we have a lot of things to deal with, like when it comes to like Zionists willing to even and centrist liberals willing to even support explicit white nationalism in order to get other agendas done. I think the irony of the personal lives, this isn't even in the files, even if Thiel's not implicated in ever going to the island. Thiel's a polyamorous gay man who's also lecturing Christians about the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. And no one's even pointing that out. My friends, like, this is a confirmation of the contradictions and things that you lie to yourself about in plain sight every fucking day. And yeah, I'm mad about it. I'm furious. I'm also mad, however, that people are jumping on certain parts of this so fast as to almost be able to discredit themselves later on in the future. Examples. The Epstein's Fortnite account has been utilized multiple times as somehow proof that he's still alive and hiding in Israel, and that wasn't just a hacker who got his account name. Because I don't know, you could fake someone's death to that extent, to the extent that like you'd even fake confidential reports in a file that was not ever supposed to see the public light, but you would be so sloppy as to just use the same fucking account.
Leave name the Fortnite account alone.
Two, the number of people who claim that we know somehow that, and this has been popular in the left and the right, from Candace Owens to a former friend of mine, Colin Drum, who have claimed that we had evidence that Mossad was somehow behind the Taylor Robinson killing of Charlie Kirk, or that they did it somehow and Taylor Robinson's the fall guy. There is literally no evidence anywhere for that. What is happening is people are figuring out a teleological worldview in which there are no coincidences. And like I will tell you, there are very little coincidences in the structural sense, but we don't have any evidence that it wasn't a personal vendetta from a former libertarian who became left-wing because he fell in love with his trans roommate. There is nothing I've seen anywhere that indicates otherwise.
Yeah.
And yet that is being dropped too.
If we were to take the time to think seriously about this peek behind the curtains of what certain members, powerful members of the ruling class, think, what they say when they think it's private, the connections they make with one another, it appears that Epstein was in three different circles, and these are maybe not concentric, they're certainly overlapping circles. And he was a fixer in all of them. A fixer is a very specific role, and obviously one now that we see with these files coming out, a necessary role. If you want your conspiracy, like this is where the conspiracies come from.
This is the rational truth of them.
Rational truth of it. There's a circle of power, political power, right? It encompasses everyone from, I wouldn't say J.D. Vance because he's more recent. Everyone from Bill Clinton to Gordon Brown in Britain.
To Clarence Thomas.
To Mohammed bin Salman. To random Pakistani and African and Asian political rulers, politicians, right? This is a circle where people like Epstein, billionaire financiers, let's call them what they are, right, are able to filter and understand the interests of their subsect of global capital and communicate that to political power brokers in such a way that they can have influence on them, these networks of influence, and they can connect different politicians who might have a tough time fixing up with one another. They could fix them together. So you have the circle of political power, and then you have the economic circle, the circle of finance. And this, you see a lot of the emails, certainly the Rothschilds ones, you know, people love Rothschild conspiracy, right? These have been going around since the 18th century, I guess, right? When the Rothschilds, you know, as a family did something. There's a reason why there is a Rothschild conspiracy. But if you see, you know, it's Jeffrey Epstein in his role as a financier and a friend helping the new CEO of Rothschild get her feet under her as she tries to basically become like the leader of this financial institution. You see Epstein making connections between her and bankers in London, bankers in Manhattan, bankers across the Middle East. When some money needs to be moved from one location to another, he's there. In fact, when people need funding, when people need startup money, when people need loans, he's there with, you know, 20 billion or not 20 billion, 200 million, 2 billion here, 2 billion there, whatever. This is an essential role, and this is like the personnel, the fixer aspect of what happens day in and day out. We see
he's also able to launder money,
and he's able to launder money
too. I just want to be clear that we don't really know how Epstein got as rich as he got. We still don't know. We know that he seemingly won some lotteries and into his ranch on the border of Mexico, that seems really suspicious. And I will say on this stuff, I actually do think conspiracy narratives have some strong.
Why does Les Wexner trust him and make him a billionaire and buy him all sorts of houses and stuff? Right. There is something sketchy there, but yeah.
Right. So you have someone who was brought in as given patronage and has become an ultimate fixer. And he does so through building to the worst nightmarish base instincts that you think some men might have.
And that's the third circle. This third circle is sex trafficking. And like, you don't have to be a politician or a financier to be a sex trafficker, but it certainly helps. And access to young women, young abusable women, let's call them international, being able to move them across borders and give access to people like Prince Andrew or Bill Clinton or Donald Trump or whatever, is a circle, is an asset, is another fixer role that you can play. And so if we understand these, that there's these three circles of power, right? And we understand that Epstein exists at the intersection of all of these things, we understand what, I'm not talking about this in a sexual, purely sense, but what the needs of the ruling class are, what they need somebody to fix for them. And these networks of power exist in such a way that one day, of course, they could be talking about deals within Swiss banking and laundering money from Israel or China or wherever. And the next day they're talking about the young women that they're securing and bringing to Fort Lauderdale in order to be abused. And the next day they're hooking Pete Mandelson up with Keir Starmer and figuring out a way. And I just don't see like the need for there to be anything satanic about this. I feel like some of the more lurid stuff, lurid details, lurid claims from random or like from witnesses, let's say, of dubious origin, are very titillating. And of course, it's very titillating to imagine George H.W. Bush like abusing prepubescent boys and cutting their feet up with scimitars, like very titillating. I understand why people want to focus on this. It's like, it's amazing to imagine that kind of barbarism existing among like the everyday corridors of power. But whether that's true or not, and I'm not sure that it is, it doesn't matter. We can see the contours and the outlines of what's necessary for the ruling class when they have these fixers, and how Epstein fit into that, into these different circles of power. And I think is more interesting than speculations about Maria Abramovich's spirit cooking and cannibalism and stuff like that, because I just don't see any evidence of it. And even if there was evidence of it, it would be damning for like dozens of people. But would it be damning for the broader ruling class? We have to do that work ourselves, I think.
Well, I mean, look, I know that multiple people are going to see this as a myth about the corruption of the ruling class. And I say myth, and not in the sense that they don't believe it, but it's going to prove everything they think already. I'm going to say some things that I think are going to make people a little bit more uncomfortable. One, you already knew a lot of the worst stuff in here was happening. You did. You lie to yourself about it every day to get up in the morning, but you do. We know about sex trafficking. We know that it usually takes money to do and access to do. Who do you think was doing that? You know that that intelligence agencies often play against each other with the same people. You know this if you look at any, like, who's implicated in any situation. It seems like everybody always is like, oh, the liberals find evidence of the FSB, which they didn't call the KGB because whatever, because apparently history didn't happen to them. And then you find evidence of the CIA, and then you find evidence of course they are. That's literally what they're designed to do. It is not even secret that they're designed to do that. They are trying to leverage international intelligence and interest in any flashpoint on the fucking planet. That's what they do.
Young men and women for sex are an asset to be traded.
Right.
Let's just be honest about it. They're commodities.
And we've known way before the Epstein files that the FBI and also the CIA were willing to allow sex trafficking, even to catch sex traffickers. We know that. Because the victims are not as important. It's maintenance over the elites who participate in it. That's not anything you needed the Epstein files to know. What the Epstein files makes abundantly clear is that, yes, Virginia, there are conspiracies, but honestly, they're more chaotic than it apparently looks. And the structures of these that allow these things to happen should concern you almost as much as what has happened. I'm not saying this is a thing. We're going to talk about Michael Parenti. We might have a whole episode on my ambiguities about Michael Parenti. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
We probably don't have time to get into it. But I do think that this is one thing that he was like somewhat right about. And it used to make me kind of a little bit mad about Sirin Mao, for example, who, even when I agree with him, I think abstractified this too far. Systems require capitalists to be capitalists as individuals. They are not just mutely compelled to do what they do. However, certain kinds of people will never be successful capitalists for very long. They might be for a very short kind of time period. You'll hear about capitalists who basically give all their money and go in philanthropy or whatever. They exist. They're super rare because those kind of people generally aren't successful. Or if they do that, it's because they have some trauma. That is a structure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We also have to deal with the fact that the horrors of everyday life, sex trafficking, incest, child abuse, how many people do you, you know the stats on the average person that you know in your life who has been sexually assaulted by someone close to them? And I'm not saying this to take away from the horror of Jeffrey Epstein, but motherfuckers, one in seven boys that you've known, and one in five women that you've known have been sexually assaulted by someone close to them, or even gone to the extent of trafficking and rape. That is so common in our society.
Yep.
All right. we started making, you know, light of liberal overclaims by hiding it in structures and not naming names about stuff like rape culture, because eventually it became used as a metaphor for every fucking thing. But the reality is that this kind of abuse is endemic in our society at almost every level. The more elite you are, the worse these people can get.
More elite you are, the more power you have to do, I think, what are democratically evil things, the sexual abuse. You know, there is a difference, maybe not even a is there a qualitative difference between what Jeffrey Epstein does and a Catholic priest does when he abuses a boy?
It's a difference in scale.
It's a difference in scale, right? But is it a difference in quality? Maybe. You know, I think that, like, these are crimes, and these are systemic crimes as well. And I think we can make judgments about it. Like, there is a betrayal at the heart of the Catholic priest and his abuse. Maybe that's not there because we'd expect, like, a global billionaire financiers to be more libertine in their desires or whatever. But, like, let's all recognize something from these revelations, and let's recognize when you're tying this, I think, to, like, larger structures of abuse that exist in our society. Let's tie it to Gaza as well. Let's tie it to Ukraine. Let's tie it to Bethlehem Steel. Let's do it all. We live in barbarism, folks. Live in barbarism.
I hate to tell you that the socialism or barbarism question was already solved in 1917.
It's been solved, and we've been living in barbarism ever since. And there's been these beautiful myths that we've told ourselves. International law was one of them, and maybe it existed for some time. Maybe it existed as, like, an impulse or as, like, a cover for other things, right? But, like, can we claim that exists after Gaza anymore? We all knew that there were...
I don't know why we can claim that it exists after fucking Sudan. I don't know why we could claim that it existed after the war on terror. I mean, I want to be honest with you. More people have died in the war on terror than in the Gaza genocide. Which is not to say that Gaza isn't a genocide. What it is actually to say is that the Palestinians have already been reduced to such a small population that they could fit into Alabama over the history of, you know, the Nakba's and everything else has happened to them before people get, you know, think that I'm somehow saying that it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of atrocity. Gaza was one that we all finally fucking looked at.
Yeah, we had to.
And I've been talking about Gaza for a long time and always ending in utter despair because I didn't see anyone doing much about it. And I still don't. It seems like the entire world elite class, including the good guys, have decided that keeping your mouth shut about that, or even using it to motivate people, but never actually fixing it, even if it means that, you know, between a tenth and a fourth of the Gazan population is dead, of a people that are already been reduced to a tiny amount, like, say, 6 million in a world of 8 billion.
Some of your faves might be implicated, folks. Remember who said that? It was Chelsea Clinton. And I'm not sure what was the context of it? Was it about Epstein? I don't remember.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, some of our faves might be implicated. You have to understand that if it's now clear, and it should be after all these revelations, after the 20th century and now into the 21st century, it's clear now that we live in barbarism. There are no good guys. There's no, like, saviors. There's no Bill Clinton, Barack Obama. There's no, what's the guy, Plattner, the fucking oyster farmer in Maine, or Zoran Mondani.
AOC's not implicated in, Bernie Sanders is not implicated in the Epstein files. Don't get me wrong. I'm not implying that. But I want you to look at what AOC has done, which is to carry water for people who are, and to make elaborate excuses, which flows downstream to even independent media apparatuses who feel like they need to defend all this, to not looking at the way elite capture is a limitation and also a problem for the left, but also not looking at the actual incentive of working class politicians to be bought off.
Yes.
Specifically. And why you don't see that many of them, and when you do, it's almost always they are some of the most craven people. It's not because working class people are craven. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you look at these structures, you will see a lot of really ugly things. And yes, I you know what? I know, almost beyond a shadow of a doubt, that if we were to like look, go check the Epstein styles, that even if half of the craziest shit is not true, the stuff that is true should shock us all to a moral core.
Absolutely.
And we should be like calling for the heads of these people. I am Absolutely. Not denying that at all. That what actually bothers me is that the horrific barbarism of this, as you've been saying, can get downplayed in making it so exotic and making it so exactly. strange
exactly.
and
making it seem That's so small. That's what I'm fucking saying. It's not to absolve any of these people. And it's not to say they shouldn't be put up against the fucking wall. I think we should gain the power that one day we might be able to put them against a wall, right? It's only to say that by exoticizing it, you turn it into a fucking game. You gamify the entire thing. You turn it into a titillation. You turn it into like a game that you play. Like, what if this happened? What if that happened? All these speculations ultimately absolve a ruling class of barbarians, you know, and we ourselves barbarize ourselves when we become titillated, sexually excited or psychologically excited by the details of things that may or may not have happened. Irregardless of whether they happened or not, we got to overthrow these motherfuckers and work to put them up against the wall. But I'm not sure. And it's not for nothing. Okay. It's not for nothing that I brought up the church committee. Because there was a great myth, and you and I, all of us here, I think, grew up believing this myth that there was corruption in the White House, that intrepid reporters and informers inside the White House and in the Washington Post, you know, they figured out where this corruption laid.
Right. And we were impeached able to take the president,
or we didn't actually impeach him, but he resigned.
And we did the War Powers Act. And
then the War Powers Act and the Church Committee and the Pike Committee. And like, we put this to bed using public powers and we're able to like create a new and improved American political system. But what I'm saying is that Jeffrey Epstein comes out of the reaction of the deep state to having its wings clipped. You know, Iran-Contra, which it seems like he was a part of, right, shows that these same forces, you know, you can clip their wings, but they'll just go underground. And after this, after these revelations, do you think any, I just don't think that there's
also who showed this to you,
people? Right.
Who do you think it's because they thought that your popular pressure was going to bring them to accountability? Do you think it's because, you know, I have been shocked at how little reporting has been, like, basically outside of things like drop site and maybe The Intercept and then some weird stuff Financial you've seen. Times has... Yeah. Financial Times and The Guardian. But in America, there was the Post trying to spin somehow that Zora Mamdani was implicated in all this, which, like I said, his mom is in the files once. There's no implication of anything untoward. It is gross. It shows how these elite circles work, and it shows that a lot of people you don't think are in them actually are, but it is not, there's no proof of untowardness. It doesn't even mean Zoran doesn't believe what he says. This is another thing people misunderstand when I say this. I'm like, some of these people may be very sincere. It doesn't change what their origins are. That's how they can play. I mean, same with Mac Blumenthal. I'm not here coming on a show to like intelligence agency jack someone with no evidence. Yeah. We don't have evidence.
No.
And I also want to tell people conspiracies happen. The difference between conspiracies and conspiracism is the conspiracists think that there's a teleology beyond, you know, structures that leads to all this. I also think the structuralists have a problem, and sometimes they pretend that structures don't have individuals making decisions and driving their decadent cycles. I think we have to look at the fact that these structures produce and award certain kinds of people, and that's really fucking ugly. They are metaphorically and maybe even quite literally sometimes fucking on a skull, on a pile of bones. I don't know. But you can get lost in the fact that the pile of bones is happening, which is horrifying enough, then not look at what enables this to happen over and over again. And you also can pretend like this is exotic and not throughout our society. You might go, oh, it's throughout our elites. No, Virginia, to use a early 20th century catchphrase, it's throughout everything.
Absolutely.
All right. And that ugly truth should hit you. I mean, like, we talked about this in the other day. How much implicit sex trafficking is going on to the fact that some of the most, you know, foreign artists' visas are all going to fucking OnlyFans models? I would love to believe that they're all voluntary sex workers who are totally above board and there's nothing untoward about it. But you literally have a man famous on the right now, Andrew Tate, who brags about the fact he used to be a sex trafficker.
Yes, literally. You know, this man was a sex trafficker, and he is apparently millions of boys. He's a idol, right? And he is a right wing influencer,
right? Is he in the Epstein files? I don't think so. Who doesn't fucking matter. Thing, does right?
Is the point?
like, I think we can get too lost in the files. Also, there are people like Rebecca Watson, the skeptic, who is in the files because she like had issues with Richard Dawkins and is brought up indirectly in that sense. There's all kinds of crazy shit in those files. Like,
and there's no indication that I've seen that Noam Chomsky, or I hate to say it, even Steven Pinker or Alan Dershowitz, even people I don't like, were necessarily involved in.
I think we got a lot more evidence on Dershowitz. I think you should be careful on that one.
Okay. But, well, he kept his underwear on. He said, there's no even the most execrable characters like Dershowitz, right? We can speculate about where they landed on the sexual abuse stuff, and maybe Dershowitz did, but people think that, or people are saying that because Chomsky was on Epstein's jet, that he was part of the sexual abuse circle of power. And I think that part of being a fixer, part of being a mover and shaker in these liberal, sort of Clinton-esque circles in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and early teens, part of that was like being part of this intellectual milieu. And Chomsky is certainly part of that. It doesn't absolve him of, I think, the heinous things that he did trying to do PR for this gentleman, right? But like, I feel like there's a lot of slippage here where people, just because they're in the Epstein circle, people assume that they're like cutting little boys up with like scimitars and like what, pulling their intestines out and eating them or something. And I just, there's not evidence that people like Chomsky were part of that.
I don't care.
I don't give a shit either about Chomsky, but I think that this does show that even, you know, some of our faves are going to be implicated. Even our favorite members of the intelligentsia, just as our least favorite, like Dershowitz, members of the intelligentsia, we have to understand that our intelligentsia is just as rotten, just as corrupted, just as barbaric, including the ones that we might want to celebrate. On a certain level, they're just as barbaric as anybody else, reflecting the barbarism of the system and the people that ultimately, whether they believe it or not, they're upholding, or at least defending, legitimating, let's say.
On some level, Chomsky's moral failure is that he was always implicated in power. I mean, the work of Chris Knight makes it. He tried to keep some kind of moral distance. He really did try. But his linguistics was, whether or not it was proof that it actually worked for the military here nor there, but his linguistics was used by military analysts and actually shaped the way his linguistics were developed. His highly attempt at compartmentalizing all of his works and his interests into different worlds was always an issue. And the fact that he like never had any real truck with, you know, left-wing organizations, although he talked to anybody. And towards the end of his life, I mean, he was basically railing about Corbyn conspiracy theories. Mm. I mean, he's not dead yet, but he's been
largely had a stroke,
not,
right?
Yeah, he's not largely seemingly cognitive enough to respond or engage in any of this. For me, I think, you know, I didn't have a lot of these. Like, yeah, I liked Chomsky when I was 14. Chomsky's inability to understand the Sino-Soviet split, though, in Cambodia and who he was siding with or not siding with in that, always set poorly with me. His inability to be like his free speech absolutism, which I don't even necessarily disagree with. I do believe in absolute free speech, but I'm not going to morally defend Holocaust deniers on some like weird tangent, even if I think the laws that make them illegal are weird. I think, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, there are people who come out looking, clean. Norman Finkelstein, despite whatever relationship he had to Ron Ant, which, was problematic in and of itself, but turns out to be a moral paragon, and he did not succumb to this kind of shit.
And he's a Chomskyite, right? Yeah. He was part of Chomsky's circles. Maybe Finkelstein comes out looking good in these revelations because he wasn't a professor at MIT, because Dershowitz and others undermined him and he wasn't able to enter those particular
courses. I mean,
I don't know. Who knows?
To me, it seems like we should just give people a credit for not being corrupted when they're not, regardless of why.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've talked about Chomsky was put in such desperate straits and he took money from Ron Ants. Ron Ants gave money to all kinds of people, including white nationalists. Does that mean that he shouldn't have done it? Well, when the ISO fell, Mondo Weiss took money from Ron Ants for a little while and eventually gave it up. The Rundorf-Born Society took some money and eventually moved away from it. But even there, did it affect Finkelstein's politics? I mean, I don't think so. And Finkelstein's obsessions about cultural issues aside, which I find silly that we ever focused on that. Mm. He comes out looking good, but not a lot of people do. Mm. And I'm just going to, you know, as we've been implying, just because you're not in the files doesn't mean that we're not going to find out something hard about you somewhere else. There's different. Somebody kept on saying, is it crazy that Epstein was at the center of everything? It was like one guy. And I'm like, you don't know how many one guys there are. You just know
right. One. Yeah.
Like, you don't know about the others. Definitionally, you don't.
Right.
Know.
Peter Mandelson was one of them, right? Like the people who are popping up here, maybe they seem like bit players or like co-conspirators of Epstein, had their own rackets going. Like these are rackets, you know. Peter Mandelson was at the forefront in the 1980s and 1990s of bringing Blairism into being, you know, of helping to create new labor. And he parlayed that into such corruption that I think he was fired twice from the Blair administration before being appointed again by Gordon Brown and now Keir Starmer. And there is this, I was just listening
about this the other day. Dick Cheney's not in the files. One of the worst, most corrupt fixtures I could think of, you know, in the corporate world, not in the files.
And maybe he had his own circles, right? That we'll never know.
We don't know.
There's no disclosure.
And maybe he was an optimal family manager, tapping to occasionally shoot his friends in the face. I don't know.
Maybe he was tied to
corruption he represented.
He was getting kickbacks for the invasion of Iraq. Like I'm old enough to remember all that shit in 2002, 2003. The kind of vulgar critiques of the war on terror and the Iraq war, which might be true. You know, I think that like we can do two things at once. We can believe that these conspiracies are real and that they exist. The thick fixers in these various different circles like Epstein or Mandelson or whatever exist and actually do have power. And they are a contingent political factor in history that we need to account for. But also too, that like the barbarism goes on whether Epstein or Mandelson is included in this particular plot, because the barbarism is greater than one man, greater than one network, greater than one race of or religion of people. The barbarism is like fundamentally structural, and there's tons more rackets out there that we'll never know. And if we want to drive ourselves fucking crazy, we can just think about that all day. We could think about all the things we don't know. There's unknown unknowns and there's unknown knowns, right? Donald Rumsfeld. I just don't think that it's a very useful thing for us to do. And I think that there's a lot of material here in these revelations that might be useful for us to look at, if only to understand how unrecuperable certainly the liberal left is and the liberal right is in this country, how impossible it is to imagine allying with these people or even entering the power structures, whether that's Congress or MIT, that they run and control. That should, what they do should shock us. Their barbarism should shock us, but we should be thinking ultimately about ways that we could fight back against it. And disclosure doesn't do that. Disclosure on its own just doesn't do that. Speculation doesn't do that. Podcasts don't do that. Something else has to do that. We have to do that. Should we go to the fun half?
Yeah, I mean the fun half.
We might be there already. I don't know.
Yeah, the more facts and figures we get into, I am, let's go there. I suppose I am just sort of like going to be at a loss at what people take away from this, because I can already tell you everyone who says this isn't a grand conspiracy is being charged, you know, by quote unquote Marxist Leninist, by supporting a grand conspiracy. And I hate to tell you, Stalin would have had you shot for that. Like, I'm somewhat serious, like, because the grand conspiracy mythos that spun out of the socialist movement in the late 19th century was a big basis of future right-wing recruitment, as part of how you got people into the Freikorps, as part of how you got the Judeo-Bolshevik conspiracy. And it is weird watching people who should know better pretend that it's all explains everything. But also, that said, there is a grand conspiracy of fixers and intelligence agencies. It's just not as unified as we would like. It's structural. It's, and there are individuals responsible for it, and they should be held accountable. I find that people, you know, maybe we can talk about a lot of the economic stuff. Maybe I want to take a quick diversion, and we'll do another one of these students to talk about, because guys, we had 20 pages of notes and we've covered 3 pages of them. Yeah. About the dam breaking, but I also want to talk about who the left wing subject is today, because I've come to some unfortunate realizations about it, and about its, what is frankly I consider pseudo activity. And with that, you know, maybe that's a place to start and get into how they're going to respond to you know, these bigger, more, you know, trying to get people to look at like what's actually going on with gold or housing or AI or any of this right now has actually been very fucking hard.
Yeah.
It's like okay, so we're the people who are supposedly materialist and, you know, even get accused of being economistic, but like me trying to get you to look at the economy and its relationship to these other things you're seeing seems to be damn near impossible. So that's what, maybe we should go behind the paywall and talk about that.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, folks, we'll see you there on the other side. Patreon.com/thiswreckage to listen to the whole thing. Patreon.com/varnvlog to watch the whole thing. It'll be up there. So we'll see you guys on the other side.